This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. You've seen those pictures of air pollution over in China, right? If not, it's definitely worth a Google or two because it's terrible. There aren't too many other ways to spin it. The Chinese government says it's working on getting its air under control, but they do have a long way to go. And this being the only planet we have, until China figures it out, anything we do here to cut pollution really makes a difference only at the margins. But right about here, it's worth a mention that not all that long ago, we had our own absolutely horrendous air pollution problems. It's the starting point for our series this week called We Used to Be China. From the Sustainability Desk, here is Sarah Gardner with the history of L.A. smog.
If you live in L.A. long enough, you start thinking of every story as a possible screenplay. Nobody's made L.A. Smog the movie, but you could pitch it as a horror flick, a political thriller, hey, for that matter, a love story with the automobile as a lead character. Chip Jacobs co-wrote the book Smogtown.
It would start on a day, July 1943, hot, broiling day.
Establishing shot, a grim, hazy skyline.
This is the city, Los Angeles, California.
Cut to a series of shots, fumes belching from a wartime aircraft factory, an oil refinery, a traffic jam. Then a foggy fume bank descends on the city.
But it's not like the other periodic smogs. This sucker stays and intensifies and it spreads.
Cut to workers downtown, coughing, wiping their burning eyes. Then an emergency room full of nauseated men, women, and children. Thick smog like this is such a mystery in 1943. Some people suspect
it's a gas attack.
A gas attack?
It must be the Japanese.
It's the Japanese!
That really happened. But the 1943 smog siege wasn't L.A.'s last, and it triggered a long, frustrating battle against air pollution in this country that's still not over.
'Cause I'm taking a trip California way and make the San Fernando Valley my home.
Bing Crosby made L.A. sound like a Garden of Eden, but in reality, it's a pollution trap. The surrounding mountains hem in any dirty air. And in post-war L.A., one of the fastest-growing economies in the world, there was plenty of dirty air. Smoke and fumes from chemical and steel plants, refineries. Oh, and from backyard incinerators. Imagine a city of 2 million people all burning their trash in their backyards. Historian Sarah Elkind.
They saw this as much more sanitary than storing garbage in their yards until it could be collected.
Elkind says early on, at least, the Chamber of Commerce agitated for cleaner air. L.A. had sold itself as a place where nature and industry could thrive side by side, a clean, modern city, not like sooty old Chicago or Detroit.
Yes, this is the land of the rainbow's end, where man lives longer and better and breathes the air of a newfound world.
Instead, smog was making Los Angeles the butt of jokes, so the city created the first air pollution control district in the country. Its first director vowed to clean up the air in 3 years, tops. Pollution cops started cracking down on smokestack emissions. One small problem.
Any gains from that were completely overwhelmed by the surge in automobile ownership.
There he comes now in his merry Oldsmobile. It's a futuristic Oldsmobile with the newest push-button features.
By the late 40s, L.A. had more cars than most countries. The idea that these sleek machines could be fouling L.A.'s air, nobody wanted to believe that. Then along came a hero worthy of movie stardom. Enter Ari Hugginsmith, a middle-aged biochemist at Caltech who was studying the flavor of pineapples. Okay, Hugginsmith was no Superman, but he did save L.A. in a sense. In 1950, he took a year off to study the brownish haze plaguing his beloved Pasadena, and he developed a theory. Jim Lentz is a leading air pollution authority.
Now, in retrospect, it seems like it wasn't too hard, but he must have been a pretty brilliant chemist. He quickly concluded that automobiles were a big part of the problem here in Los Angeles.
Hagensmit discovered an entirely new kind of air pollution, photochemical smog. LA's famous sunshine was cooking emissions from cars and factories to form a dangerous gas, ground-level ozone. That was the stuff stinging people's eyes and making the city smell vaguely of bleach in the summer. The oil companies realized if people blamed smog on refineries and cars, they were in trouble. So they struck back with science they paid for.
And they actually had a member go to Caltech and give a lacerating speech against Hagensmit, patronizing, demeaning. How could such an intelligent man come to such a horrible conclusion?
But by the mid-50s, there was no question. The biggest smog culprit in Los Angeles was sitting in everyone's driveway. But scientific consensus, as we know, doesn't translate into action. And the auto industry stuck to this script.
The science just isn't conclusive.
That's right. Any changes right now would clearly be premature.
Besides, the technology's not even there yet.
And what were they thinking?
This will cost too much money.
Familiar dialogue, isn't it? But by then, the auto and oil industries were among the most powerful in the world. Profits were their business, not public health. But public health was suffering. On the worst days in L.A., ERs overflowed. Parents kept their kids home from school. The city's air pollution czar sat in Hagensmit's plexiglass smog chamber to prove ozone's danger, and he got bronchitis. Jeff Slade grew up in L.A. in the 50s.
It was just a toxic atmosphere. I was thinking, what could you compare it to today? And I think you'd have to look at cities like Beijing. It hurt, it literally hurt to breathe.
By the late 50s, Angelenos were fed up. Anti-smog groups started sprouting all over the county. Slade's little brother suffered from severe asthma. One year it got so bad he didn't grow. Their mom, a housewife in Beverly Hills, joined a women's protest group called SOS, Stamp Out Smog, media savvy with Hollywood connections.
So they did flashy things. I have a picture sitting here in front of me of my mother with a birthday cake with a skull and crossbones on it that says, Happy Birthday, Smog. And the press just loved this kind of thing.
These ladies even dragged their kids to public hearings wearing gas masks. That kind of political theater may seem routine today, but try to imagine. The word environmentalism wasn't even in the vocabulary yet. Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, had just introduced a scary new thought that technological progress could kill us. By the early 60s, California demanded the first anti-smog controls on cars. Jim Lentz says the early ones were fairly crude.
But the idea was the elected officials here finally believed that cars were a big part of the problem, and we're going to regulate them in spite of what the automobile manufacturers said.
And here's where real life outdazzles the movies. Change happens so fast. In 63, Congress passes the first Clean Air Act. Smog is a national problem now. A few years later, it calls for auto emission standards. Then it lets California set even stricter ones. The Justice Department sues automakers for conspiring to delay anti-smog devices. And finally, says veteran regulator Mary Nichols, the Clean Air Act of 1970.
That said, we're going to set an air quality standard that's based on a public health measurement.
And let the feds decide how to achieve it. That was entirely new, and only one person in Congress voted no. Jim Lentz says, in the end, the air got better not because people were willing to change their behavior, but because technology improved. And technology, he says, often needs a big nudge.
My belief has been that humans are very innovative. In fact, my experience was if you push them a little bit, they find solutions. They just don't like to do it because it takes time and costs money, and they don't like to push ahead.
Final scene in L.A. Smog the movie, Jeff Slade, the guy from Beverly Hills, he comes back to L.A. for a visit after living in New York for years. We see Slade and his wife driving north on L.A.'s famous 405 freeway. He looks down into the San Fernando Valley and spies a beautiful mountain range.
And I said to my wife, what are those mountains? I've never seen those before. And you couldn't see them. You couldn't see them because of the smog.
And the camera pans upwards to a relatively clear LA sky. In Los Angeles, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Pictures help with a story like this, so we've put together a slideshow of how crazy LA's smog years really were. That is, of course, at marketplace.org. And it would be very cool if you would send us pictures of your city's air, your blue sky, your gray sky, smokestacks, what have you. Post them on Instagram with the hashtag MarketplaceSmogCheck. We'd appreciate it.